10th Annual Pride Parade and Festival is almost here. Join us on July 19th at Lamoureux Park in Cornwall for our free Pride Festival, featuring live entertainment, a barbecue and beer tent, bouncy castles, face paint, carnival games, and more. To learn more about the festival or register for the parade, visit diversitycornwall.ca. Diversity Cornwall would like to acknowledge the generous support of FedDev Ontario in making this event possible. Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, and Ellie Sturton. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. To start us off tonight, a message directly from downtown Kingston. Kingston Buskers Rendezvous came to an end yesterday evening with a grand finale that saw a tie for the People's Choice Award for only the third time in the festival's 35-year history. The Twins Trip, a dynamic duo of identical twins from Argentina who made their Canadian debut, tied with seasoned circus artist Richard Philby from London by way of Australia. Winning People's Choice means the performers are invited to return next year to once again wow audiences. United Way's Success by Six program was also a winner at this year's grand finale, with proceeds raised by the performers as they passed the hat benefiting the program. Success by Six is a United Way initiative set up to help improve the lives of Kingston's youngest children. Success by Six is based on the idea that it takes a village to raise a child. And we all have a role to play in ensuring every child has a chance to succeed early in life. Thousands of people flocked to this year's festival, which featured a number of new elements, including Jungle Junction, a designated kids' play area funded by the Government of Ontario. Complete with large inflatables, Jungle Junction also offered collaborative coloring tables, live music, and a busker boot camp, where festival performers taught workshops on juggling, beatboxing, balloon twisting, and more. Sandy Griffiths, events manager with Downtown Kingston, states, quote, "The Kingston Buskers Rendezvous once again proved to be an outstanding success, as enthusiastic crowds gathered to celebrate the incredible talents of our performers. Despite the blistering hot temperatures, the dedication and generosity of our attendees continued all weekend. We are immensely grateful for the continued support and look forward to many more years of memorable performances and community engagement," end quote. Plans are already underway for next year's Kingston Buskers Rendezvous, which will take place from July 9th to 12th, 2026. Once again, that was a message directly from downtown Kingston. In a message directly from the Southeast Health Unit, Environment Canada has issued a heat warning for our region. The extreme heat is expected to last until Wednesday, July 16th. The health unit is sending a reminder that high temperatures may impact your health. Heat warnings are issued when daytime temperatures of 31 degrees Celsius or higher and nighttime temperatures not cooler than 20 degrees last for at least 2 days, or when a humidex of 40 degrees Celsius for at least 2 days is expected. Becoming overheated can cause dehydration, heat exhaustion, heat stroke, and in some cases, death. Even short periods of exposure to high temperatures can cause health problems. If you experience the following symptoms after exposure to extreme heat, seek medical attention immediately. Nausea, dizziness, blurred vision, difficulty or rapid breathing, severe headache or confusion, convulsion or fever. Everyone is at risk. However, the following people are in greater danger of being affected: elderly, people with chronic illness or who take certain medications, infants and preschool children, people who have challenges with housing and shelter, and people who participate in physical activity or are involved in strenuous outdoor work for prolonged periods. During a heat warning, the public is strongly encouraged to check on a neighbor or a friend who may have a greater risk of suffering negative health consequences from the heat and humidity. Dr. Lena Lee, Deputy Medical Officer of Health for the Southeast Health Unit, advises to keep cool and hydrated when it's hot outside and to take the following precautions. Do not leave children, adults, or pets in parked cars or sleeping outside in direct sunlight. Consult your doctor or pharmacist regarding the side effects of your medications. Drink plenty of water throughout the day, even if you don't feel thirsty. Remember to take sips often and not to guzzle your drink. Learn more about hydration at unlockfood.ca. Eat foods that have high water content, such as watermelon, grapes, and oranges. Limit caffeinated beverages such as coffee and cola. Avoid going out in the blazing sun or heat. If you must go outside, stay in the shade as much as possible. Take a cool bath or shower periodically, or cool down with cool, wet towels. Whenever possible, go to an air-conditioned room or building. Wear loose-fitting, light clothing and a wide-brimmed hat when outdoors. Keep window shades or drapes drawn and blinds closed on the sunny side of your home. Avoid outdoor activities during the hottest part of the day. Keep electric lights off or turn down low. Visit a local splash pad, wading pool, or cooling center. If you can, eat a variety of foods that can be safely prepared without using the oven. Don't skip meals. Instead, eat smaller amounts more often. Use fans to draw cool air at night, but do not rely on a fan as the main cooling device during long periods of high heat and humidity. Reduce the use of personal vehicles, stop unnecessary idling, avoid using oil-based paints and glues, pesticides, and gas-powered small engines. For more information on how to protect your health during extreme heat, you can visit the Southeast Health Unit's Exposure to Hot/Cold Temperatures page. For specific heat-related questions, you can call 1-800-660-5853 or 613-345-5685. You can also connect with the Health Unit on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram for important public health updates. Once again, that was a message directly from the Southeast Health Unit on the heat warning that is currently issued for our region. In a message directly from the City of Kingston, Emancipation Day celebrations, remembering the past and working towards a better future. August 1st is Emancipation Day, marking the day Britain's Parliament abolished slavery across most of the British Empire in 1834. It has since become an annual day of remembrance and reflection on the struggle for human rights and the ongoing work to eliminate racism and discrimination in Canada. To recognize Emancipation Day in Kingston, a flag-raising ceremony with Mayor Patterson, members of council, and local community leaders will take place at 11:30 a.m., followed by a community service fair from 12:30 to 3 p.m., both in Confederation Park on Friday, August 1st. Vanessa Mensa, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Manager at the City of Kingston, states, quote, "Emancipation Day asks us not only to remember that slavery existed, but to confront how its legacies still live on. It's a call to reckon with the past, honor the strength of those who survived it, and challenge the systems that continue to deny true freedom today. Attending the city's Emancipation Day event is more than just showing up. It's an act of recognition, a step towards learning, and a commitment to building a more just and equitable future together," end quote. Emancipation Day is free to attend and open to all ages. You can learn more about Emancipation Day on the city's website. Once again, that was a message directly from the City of Kingston on their upcoming Emancipation Day celebrations on August 1st. That wraps up your headlines for this evening. Next up is Jesse Bell with your CFRC weather and traffic report for the week.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. Monday, July 14th, daytime high of 27, going to feel closer to 30 with the humidity. Bear in mind, we could see some haze in the Kingston region due to wildfire smoke, which will create reduced air quality. Tuesday, July 15th, more humidity and more hazy sunshine, daytime high of 28, but it's going to feel even warmer at 32 with a UV index of 9. Wednesday, July 16th, much of the wildfire smoke will have passed, but it's still going to be a hot, humid day in the city of Kingston with a daytime high of 27, feeling closer to 33. Thursday, July 17th, high of 27, feeling closer to 33 with the humidity. It's going to be a very humid and very warm day here in the city of Kingston. Friday, July 18th, we have a couple of showers in the forecast with the possibility of a thunderstorm that will cut down on some of the humidity, but it's still going to feel like 30 degrees here in the city of Kingston. Moving into the weekend, Saturday, July 19th, probably the nicest day of the week. It's going to be 26, but only feel like 28. Beautiful, sunny, clear. climate and conditions. Sunday, July 20th, we are expecting rain, a 73% chance of precipitation, daytime high of 25, feeling like 26. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, July 21st, it'll be 26 degrees with plenty of beautiful sunshine. Here is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. The LaSalle Causeway will be closed on Sunday, July 20th from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Moving on to the road closures for the week, Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Abidon Road, Highway 2 to Middle is closed until August 15th for the removal and replacement of a culvert. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Baggett Street, Berry to West is closed July 16th at 7 a.m. to July 23rd at 7 p.m. to accommodate pedestrian and participant safety for the Canadian Little League Championship. Brock Street, Division 2 Palace is closed July 14th to 31st from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. each day for road resurfacing. Carlton Street, Alfred to Guy closed until August 8th for a gas main installation. Creighton Street at Chatham closed July 14th to 17th from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. each day to accommodate the removal of existing water and sanitary sewer services. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Guy Street, Carlton to Division is closed until August 8th for a gas main installation. King Street, Place d'Armes to Tragically Hip Way closed July 14th to 27th for Paw Patrol event-related parking and storage at Slush Puppy Place. South Bartlett Street, Smith to Victoria is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen is closed until October 3rd for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Victoria Street, Princess to North Bartlett is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. And Wise Street, Woodbine to Megan is closed until July 31st to accommodate construction of a new sidewalk and road improvements. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Accommodation Road, 6th concession to Whitechurch, expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Abidon Road, middle to Highway 2, expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Bayridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catterockway Woods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Collins Bay Road, Woodbine to Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes landscaping work on Collins Bay Road. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club. Expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic is down to one lane in each direction. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford. Expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Garrett Road, 6th concession to Sandhill. Expect delays while a contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Highway 2 to Abidon and St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abidon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle. Expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead structure. Montreal Street at John Counter. Expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users. Victoria Street and Earl Street. Expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road. And Whitechurch Road, 6th concession to Woodburn. Expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract.
Now coming up, we'll have a look at some great community events running in Kingston and the area this week. On Monday, Jazz Society Mondays returns to the RCHA from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Enjoy an afternoon of classic jazz with Michael K. Myers and Rick Flanagan. Doors open at 4 and it's just a $5 cover. On Tuesday, head to Long & McQuaid at 7 p.m. for a free hands-on recording clinic. Learn how to record, mix, and master a full song from home with help from Yorkville audio experts. Also on Tuesday, enjoy a cozy evening of poetry at Time Out Bar and Bistro starting at 6:30 p.m. Local writers Meg Freer and Deborah Sherman will share original work in a relaxed setting.
On Wednesday, it's Games in the Square from 6 to 8 p.m. in Springer Market Square. Play giant board games like Connect Four and Snakes and Ladders, or bring your own game to share. It's free, fun, and open to all ages. Thursday starts with Stories in the Square at 10:30 a.m. in the City Hall Amphitheater. It's a free drop-in story time from the public library, perfect for young kids. That evening, check out Best of the Fest at the Broom Factory. Starting at 8:45 p.m., it's an outdoor screening of award-winning short films from the Kingston Canadian Film Festival. Tickets are $10 and kids under 12 get in free. Or pop into Life Drawing at Art Noise from 6 to 8 p.m. It's just $10 to join and practice figure drawing in a relaxed and welcoming space. On Friday, grab a spot in Springer Market Square at 11 a.m. for a chef demo with Miss Bao. Watch a dish come together with local ingredients and enjoy a $2 sample. That evening, Rowena Way hosts Drag Bingo at Carlo Estates Winery from 6 to 9 p.m. It's 19 plus and just $10, which goes towards your first drink. Also on Friday at 6 p.m., Springer Market Square offers free line and square dancing lessons. No partner needed, just bring your boots and your best moves. On Saturday, Daft Brewing hosts Sour Fest from noon to 8 p.m. Expect live music from Nolan Hubbard, sour beer from 7 breweries, and $15 pizzas for ticket holders. Tickets are $10 in advance or $15 at the door and include 2 drink tickets. It's a 19 plus event for charity. And finally on Sunday, start your day with yoga in the park at Battery Park from 10 to 11 a.m. It's free, just bring your own mat. From 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., browse local vendors at the Montreal Street Vintage Market between Princess and Queen. Then from noon to 3 p.m., head to Confederation Park for Pull Together for Epilepsy. Teams of 8 will pull a fire truck to raise awareness and funds. Registration opens at 11 a.m., and it's all in support of Epilepsy Southeastern Ontario. Have a local event you would like covered on CFRC's news programming and our website? Contact us today via cfrc.ca. Hey folks, I'm Ellie Sturton, and coming up are your live music events happening around town this week. On Monday, Nolan Hubbard brings his indie folk charm to the Cove Inn from 5 to 8 p.m. as part of their Musical Monday series. And later, the Morning Doves hit Musiki Cafe from 8 to 11 p.m. with their funky jazz trio. On Tuesday, the Fiesta Mexicana rolls into the Cove Inn from 6 to 9 p.m. with Ottawa's Los Paisanos Mariachi Band. Expect salsa, kumbaya, and big energy. Tickets are $25 at the door. Over on Princess Street, Trellis HIV and Community Care is hosting a free Indigenous drumming circle, and all ages are welcome. On Wednesday, folks can see Tyler Brett Forks at the Bank Gastro Bar Courtyard from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Expect breezy originals and bluesy covers. And at 7 p.m., Springer Market Square hosts Swingin' Summer with the nostalgic sound Big Band, playing joyful jazz from the Big Band era. On Thursday, head to the RCHA for their open mic at 6:30 p.m., followed by a set from Michael George. Cover is just $5. Or see Tony Silvestri play the Cove Inn from 5 to 8 p.m. with his signature blend of keys and vocals. At Overtime Sports Bar, it's Night of Punk and Metal with 4 bands starting at 9 p.m. Cover's just $10. And The Spire hosts We Three Kings, a triple Elvis tribute at 7:30 p.m. with tickets going for just over $55. Or for fans of classical chamber music, the Griffin Trio plays St. Paul's Presbyterian Church at 3:15 p.m. On Friday, Time Out Bar and Bistro hosts Riley Merrigan playing Country and Roots at 3 p.m., followed by Kingston's own Purple Diamonds at 6 p.m. In Springer Market Square, catch Kickin' It Country featuring Whiskey Smoke live from 7 to 8 playing country tunes. You can see the Salt Cellars at Hotel Wolf Island from 7 to 9 p.m. They're a folk Americana duo that blends blues and jazz. At Musiki Cafe, the Dave Barton Trio plays smooth jazz from 8 to 11 p.m. Or head to Tiernan Oak for the Celtic Kitchen Party, starting at 9 p.m., with a lively night of Irish, Scottish, and East Coast-inspired tunes. And later, Jelly Train takes the stage at the Toucan at 10:30 p.m., with funk, blues rock, and soulful tunes. On Saturday, catch Confederation Park's Saturday Sessions, running from 11:30 to 3:30 p.m., featuring Triola Trio, Barry Ewan, and Dave Barton. Or join Howe Island's Rockin' the Rock Festival for a full day of live music, including The Box, Goodnight Sunrise, The Brothership, and more. Tickets are $49.50. Over at Gilmore Point, Intero Bing plays a free outdoor set from 1 to 3 p.m. And at the Kingston Yacht Club, Craig Jones and the Alternative Facts perform a charity show at the Easter Seals Summerfest Regatta from 1 to 3 p.m. And Hotel Wolf Island is hosting free sets from Kevin Bowers at 4 p.m. and DePamela at 8:30 p.m. And folks can see the National Youth Orchestra playing at the Isabel at 7:30 p.m. Also on Saturday, Musiki Cafe hosts the Fake Jazz Orchestra from 8 to 11 p.m. with improvisational jazz. The Matt Smith Trio plays Time Out Bar and Bistro from 6 to 9 p.m. with blues rock covers and originals. You can also catch Steve Cheeseman and the Heaters at the Royal Canadian Legion from 8 to midnight for just $25 at the door. And at Tiernan Og, Echoes closes out the night with alt rock from 9 p.m. to midnight. On Sunday, Georgette Fry and friends play the Broom Factory at 3 p.m. with tickets for $32.50. Finkelshore Park has free music from 2 to 5 with Chris Morris, Sonia Bergen, and Drop Dead Georges. Folks can catch Savannah Shea playing Musiki from 2 to 4 and Jeff Richardson at Time Out Bar and Bistro at 3. And at 3:30 p.m., pay what you can to hear Timothy Loden play waterfront piano at Hotel Wolf Island. And finally, over at Red House Downtown, Chris Koster and his band perform from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m., and tickets for that are $25. Have a local concert that you would like covered on CFRC's website and our news programming? Contact us today via cfrc.ca.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a new single by Rockers the Winter in Canada called Wolves. This high-octane alt-rock track with punk edges and soaring vocals balances raw fury with undeniable hooks. Built on distorted guitars, driving bass, and thunderous drums, Wolves captures the chaos and clarity of confronting the people in power and realizing they'll let you down. Fans of Foo Fighters, Soundgarden, and Queens of the Stone Age will feel right at home with the Winter in Canada, known for their raucous live sets and blazing musicianship. Their new single, Wolves, is a statement of intent, loud, passionate, and impossible to ignore. Stay tuned for their new album to be released in July. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Wolves by the Winter in Canada on your favorite platforms and enjoy it with us here now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Yeah, let's go.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a new song by local psychobilly trio Screamin' Sins called Love You to Death. A hauntingly dark duet produced by Terry Benn and Ian Blackwood and featuring legendary vocalist for The Creepshow, Jen Hellcat Blackwood, who hits back hard in full Hellcat style with this raucous rockabilly track, reminiscent of the Sell Your Soul era. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Love You to Death by Screamin' Sins with Jen Hellcat Blackwood on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Cataraqui on Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee land.
Good day. You're listening to Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoff. This is edition 274. And on the broadcast this week, I'm going to be sharing a conversation that I had with Guillaume Hubert. Guillaume is a researcher and author who works with an important independent research space in Quebec, which is called IRIS, the Institut de Recherche et des Informations Socio-Économiques. This is a project, I think, that's very important. It has tried to create an informational basis for social movement critiques around social and economic injustice. For example, issues around economic inequality, issues around the Quebec government giving tax breaks to major companies, and sort of the growing inequalities in Quebec society, which I think is more broadly reflected in Canada and also internationally. I think an a project like IRES, the Institut de Recherche et des Informations Socio-Économiques, is important because it points to having informational tools that describe neoliberal economic reality in Quebec and in Canada and beyond that is embodied by growing inequality locally and globally. And I think it was really important to hear Guillaume's reflections about rising populist right politics and the ways that these inequalities are played on by politicians like Pierre Poilievre or François Legault in this context, who often name problems, speak about issues, but in fact, don't propose any meaningful solutions while actually digging in deeper to the same economic framework of neoliberalism with lineage back to economists like the right-wing Milton Friedman and, you know, politicians like Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, which have really created the framework of economic inequality that has just deepened and hollowed out a lot of the public institutions that so many communities have relied on for generations and also have fought for. And this is creating a lot of context of growing social discontent that populist right-wing voices are exploiting. And so I thought it was interesting and meaningful to speak to Guillaume about his perspectives on this particular political moment for Free City Radio.
We're in a very strange political moment in some ways where populist political parties and leaders are capitalizing and mobilizing on some real anger in society around things like the housing crisis, this sort of sense of economic unfairness, broadly speaking, of corporate power going unchecked. When it comes to play, let's say, in the Canadian context with the Conservative Party, they're playing on this. And then also in Quebec, you have this dynamic for many years with the CAQ. So Guillaume, you are with IRES. We're sitting in the office space here in Montreal. Maybe first, if you can just introduce yourself and share a little bit about this project, where we are now, and why your organization particularly has focused on trying to give some insights and sort of strategic research for social movements in relation to these sorts of points and why that's important right now. Thank you.
So my name is Guillaume Hébert. I'm a researcher at the Institut de Recherche et d'Information Socio-Économique, so IRES. I've been here for 20 years already. At first, it wasn't even a paid job. We were all doing volunteer work, but with the years, we managed to find some financing, and so it became our job. So the easiest way to describe IRES is to say that we are a left-wing think tank. So during the 90s and before, we had so many of these right-wing think tank active in the society that managed to make a lot of damage to the public policies, to bring the policies and the government, even the government itself, into the orbit of the corporate interests or the richest people of the society, their interests. So it was kind of a consensus that we needed some places, a research institute that would answer to give a response to these other think tanks. So this is the way that IRES was created, and this is what we have been doing now for 25 years. So I like to say sometimes that my job is, or our job at IRES, is 51% research and 49% communication, because we do a lot of communication. So it's a difference between a think tank like us and a research institute in the academic world, for example. They don't have specific objective in terms of media communication, but for us, it's fundamental. Our job is to take sometimes good ideas interesting ideas that circulate into the academic world, put it in a format that can be understood in wider public. And then that's a big part of our job is this. So so that would wrap a little bit what we're doing here at the ACE.
Mm-hmm. And we were exchanging recently in what I mentioned before, the context of sort of the populist politics and how that's playing out both in Quebec and Canada, and this very awkward situation where you have sort of language and a certain discourse that names inequality, that names the housing crisis, but I mean, when we get into the details, and I think this underlines the importance of a research institute to sort of like actually decode the policy.
Yes, and I don't like to say it, use that much the term populist at this moment, because populist per se and historically is not necessarily something bad. It's something that could be almost compatible with left-wing movements. Mm-hmm. So, in the first populists were in Russia in I think 19th century, like, and it was really what is common to all the populist movement we can observe, including in Latin America or in Europe, mm-hmm. or in the United States. Also, it's a moment where there is a legitimate anti-establishment or frustration, colère populaire, that make the people want to make the society more democratic, actually. So that point is quite compatible with what we say and what we want normally on the left spectrum of the mm-hmm. or the socialist tradition, let's say like this. And the problem is the extreme right and the demagogue in English movement right now we have, and that's the very frightening part we have. And it has brought a change in our work, and it's a little more, let's say sometimes a little more complicated to debate with ideas in an era where it is much more difficult to have some rational debates. So when we started working in the year 2000, beginning of 2010, we still were in an era where you would be in the media in front of an economist from a big bank or a right-wing economist working in the universities, and the economists were the most influential people and respected people in the society. It was a bad thing, of course, but it was at certain point a debate on ideas. Now that sometimes it's different. So for our work also it's different, because a part of our job is to deconstruct discourse from some of our ideological adversaries. So if we cannot, or if the debate on ideas become more complicated, because you have a huge part of the population or who gets so distrustful of the institution, of all the institution, that
including public institutions,
totally, yeah. It makes it much more difficult to do our job. Our job has to be a little more different. One of the things we've been doing right now is to consider that the institution, the neoliberal institution that we work to criticize for many years, we tend to say that right now they got really delegitimized. A lot of them became delegitimized. At some point, it can be dangerous at which point they can be delegitimized, because it sometimes can be the whole idea of democracy that can be unpopular. So that's why our work turn a little bit more to be on the proposal, try to show what could be an alternative society, instead of only getting to criticize what our adversaries try to propose as public policy. So we've did it in many sectors. One of the our main last main big proposal is in the is for healthcare in Quebec. So six big solution for healthcare in Quebec, and quite radical one, because that's the interesting part of our times, is that the people are probably much more receptive to radical ideas than they have been in other times, where the anti-system, anti-establishment feeling were not that strong are as they were today. So even criticizing capitalism is easier today than it was 15 years ago. I could not go on TV 15 years ago and criticize capitalism. It was not possible. If you do this, you're not credible anymore. We don't listen to you anymore. You're a joke. You're not a serious person. If you at 15 years ago, if you were criticizing capitalism, it's an illustration. Today, it's much more easier.
Yes.
It's different. So it's possible to bring a much more profound, let's say, reflection on our societies.
So in terms of that sort of mistrust in structures of power, and including public institutions, that can play out in very violent ways, and lead towards actually a possibility of actually radical transformation, or the exploitation of that critique towards the deconstruction of, you know, public institutions that actually emerged from social struggle originally, like public health care or public education, etc., as we're seeing in the United States. So for people listening to this broadcast in the rest of Canada, how is that playing out in Quebec?
So the tendencies are similar. Maybe that we in Quebec, the difference would be that we start from public services that are a little more, a little bigger, or we could say bigger. The size of the state in our economy is probably a little bigger than in the rest of Canada. It means also some public services sometimes, but can be la taille de l'État, la taille du secteur public dans l'économie peut être un peu plus grande au Québec. C'est une des particularités du Québec. Probablement même c'est pour ça que la crise économique de 2008-2009 avait frappé le Québec un peu moins fort que les États-Unis, évidemment, ou que le reste du Canada. Parce que les dépenses publiques se maintiennent quand il y a une crise économique. C'est un effet contracyclique qu'on dit. Quand il y a une récession, puis que le privé et les ménages diminuent les interventions, le public, lui, se maintient. Donc, ce serait une des explications pourquoi le Québec, par exemple, a moins subi la crise de 2008-2009. Donc, au Québec...
So just for people who are hearing this, you're talking about how the economic crisis in 2008, there was a cushion, in a way, due to the size of the public sector in Quebec, and the economic crisis had less effects.
A counter-cyclical mechanism, let's say, more than because even if we had that quite positive result, we haven't felt that much that crisis. The government in Quebec used that pretext to impose a drastic austerity after that crisis. It was totally unnecessary, but they did it. Many phases of austerity, which brought us at around 2012, I think, 2017, 2012, we had surpluses of about $8 billion. So when we talk to our colleague in the rest of Canada, sometimes they cannot believe that we had these kinds of surpluses in our budget in Quebec, when every other provinces still get either deficit or maybe sometime get a balanced budget. So the un coussin, we had finally won. We were ready for the pandemic, let's say, because we had a lot of surplus that we collected during the year 2010. So that's why I would say that maybe in many areas the public sector and the state is bigger, a little bit bigger historically in Quebec, but it's exactly in the same tendencies than on the rest of the rest of Canada. And
how does that play out in relation to populist politics here today?
Honestly, I don't think the color of the political movement, let's say the cultural specificities, are going to be a little different. Because we're in Quebec, and because of French, because of different cultural aspect, but except from that, I think we observe some very similar tendencies from the rest of, for example, the debate on immigration. We have exactly the same in Canada or in Quebec, and we've seen that shift. Between government that were quite cautious because from strictly an economic point of view for this government, they perceive the immigration from sometimes something positive, which it is, we believe. But now it's all, we've seen it in the rest in Canada or in Quebec. Mm-hmm. Now the discourse is not only it's a thing that has to be controlled, and it's the explanation for almost any social or economic problem we have. Yeah. It's terrible. It's a joke. It's a real joke the way we have been pointing to immigration as any the source of any of our problem.
Like housing.
Yeah, totally housing. Yeah, the government finally admit there was a housing crisis in Quebec, which he refused to do during many years. But the only moment where he authorized itself to recognize that crisis is because he can say that's immigrant responsibility. That's because of the immigrant. So that's...
Well, and as a research institute, you know, you've made, I'm sure, done work to illustrate how that's not the case. I mean, Shawinigan is a prime example in terms of it having one of the lowest vacancy rates in all of Quebec, and also having one of the lowest amounts percentage-wise of immigrant communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. It's a total. It's terrible. Yeah, when I was saying about these, we are in a times, strange time where sometimes the ideas or the debate with ideas seem to be more difficult than other moment on immigration. It's terrible. It's almost a manufactured crisis, yeah. or it's at least the responsibility of the government is terrible on the housing aspect. They decided to let the private, the market, to solve allocate the resources. They let it go. They stop building social housing, community housing, which was necessary to maintain some kind of equilibrium. They totally abandoned that, and then we find ourselves in the situation we are right now. And they say it's because there's too many people coming. It doesn't resist to any factual verification.
Yeah. So, I mean, we were exchanging recently because of this situation that, you know, the Canadian state is in flux. So, of course, you know, we're talking at a time of Trump and the, you know, threats through tariffs, etc. But also we have this dynamic of the Conservative Party. You were involved in research and, you know, connected to social movements when Harper was in power. And I do think it's an important question to ask people in different sectors and in different spaces that are affected by the Canadian jurisdiction. That's what it comes down to. I really would like to know your opinion about how do we engage with the sort of dynamics of a very real threat posed by the Conservative Party, in particular around and the sort of austerity-driven pro-corporate policy. If you even glance at their policy outline, it's shaped by these ideas.
Yes, totally. I've been talking about that difficulty to have debate on IDs. We could see a shift with the Harper government and the Conservative and Federal. And one of the big illustration or a politic or decision that symbolized a lot of this was when they decided to cut the long formulary from Statistics Canada. It was terrible because you just cut the people from data that on which you have to build to have a political debate, some democratic debate. So it was for most of the people at first it doesn't mean a lot, but for the people trying to make these debates, the access to data is fundamental. It's a shortcut to obscurantism when you don't have access to public data, to numbers, to analyze what is happening around us. So now,
accurate.
Absolutely. Yeah. And now we have some other version of that with one of the few promises of now the Conservative Pierre Poilievre that want to cut the funding of CBC Radio Canada, want to cut the funding of the public broadcasting. So even if that public broadcaster had his own problem and neoliberal tendencies, when you start cutting on the places, any public places where you're supposed to have the means to have some democratic balanced debate, you are really getting into chaos and you're really sliding into a situation where you cannot even debate anymore. One of the few places worse than Canada about the public funding of public medias and these things is the United States. I guess we can be afraid about getting into a situation where we would get much more polarized as we see in the United States in a society because when you cannot have when you we call it the echo chamber sometimes when we talk about the social media in particular, but when you are not able to have a common base to debate a little bit, when the other spectrum of the political landscape you cannot, at a certain point, you cannot debate with them at all because you're totally not in, you don't have any basis to debate. You're too far away and then you get into that what would Naomi Klein call the mirror world now, so some kind of place where the conspiracy theories, all kinds of conspiracy theories are totally dominant and where you cannot debate anymore. It's a strange place. It's hugely influential right now, and I think that to close democratic spaces can be public institutions. Can be a public broadcasting, can be your statistical agency, can be of course the schools, the access to education or health. When you close these spaces, you can find yourself in a society where it cannot debate anymore, and that from some kind of neutral point of view, then what you have is a society that have been quite damaged with neoliberal or hyper-capitalist, another term that I prefer sometimes. It's an hyper-capitalist society in public policies that we've been seeing now since the 80s. You got a lot of people who find that the society is not just, the people that are ready to don't trust anymore this institution, rightly so. Their rage sometimes is totally understandable and totally legitimate. But it's at this moment it is all canalized,
funneled
through the right wing movement, right wing extreme right or hard right or movement, political parties, and that's terribly dangerous in my opinion. So, yeah.
Guillaume, thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. You're welcome.
Thanks.
That was a conversation with Guillaume Hibert of the Institut de Recherche et des Informations Socio-Economiques based in Quebec. That's the Institute of Research and Information on Social and Economic Issues here in Quebec. It was really a pleasure to speak with Guillaume for the program Free City Radio. I'm Stéphane Christophe, and we broadcast weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays 11 a.m. on CJLO 1690 a.m. also in Montreal on Wednesdays at 8 a.m., on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m., on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m., on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, British Columbia, Saturdays at 7 a.m., on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m., on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m., and on CJSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We're also a podcast. Look us up. Just search Free City Radio. I'm Stéphane Christophe, and thanks so much for tuning in.